It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from Signal Hill here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 50 degrees. We're still looking for those partly sunny skies they're calling for, the high near 59 today. Calm winds return to the southeast and go to 5 miles per hour this afternoon. Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 47, west wind to 15. Partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 59 tomorrow too. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Coast Guard has announced new guidance about fishing boats and masks. News about high fish prices have salmon fishermen excited. Governor Dunleavy and State Revenue Commissioner Lucinda Mahoney have a fiscal plan. And more about the Into the Wild bus. That and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Barbara Klein. The Justice Department's internal watchdog is reviewing the department's use of subpoenas during the Trump administration. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports the review follows revelations that some were used to secretly obtain communications records from members of Congress and journalists.
Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz is reviewing whether the department complied with policies and procedures and whether the subpoenas and the investigations they were a part of were based on improper considerations. This comes a day after news broke that in 2018, the Justice Department secretly subpoenaed the communication records of at least two Democratic members of the House Intelligence Committee, as well as staff and family, as part of a leak investigation. The department also subpoenaed records of journalists from the Washington Post, CNN, and the New York Times, as the Trump administration aggressively pursued leaks to the media. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Also today, the Justice Department has announced new conspiracy charges against members of an anti-government militia for their alleged role in the Capitol riot. NPR's Tom Dreisbach reports that brings the total number of cases related to the insurrection to more than 500.
Prosecutors say six men from California with links to an extremist militia called the Three Percenters conspired to plan an attack on the Capitol. They allegedly brought weapons and gas masks to Washington, D.C., and some threatened political enemies with execution, though they have not been charged with committing violence that day. NPR's been tracking every criminal case related to the Capitol riot, and this is one of the more serious. Out of the 500-plus cases so far, two people have pleaded guilty. Plea negotiations and other cases are ongoing. Meanwhile, the Justice Department continues to make arrests, now more than 5 months after the Capitol riot. Tom Dreisbach, NPR News.
Millions of doses of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine have to be thrown away. NPR's Sydney Lupkin reports they were contaminated at a manufacturing site in Baltimore earlier this year.
The Food and Drug Administration has decided that several batches of Johnson & Johnson's COVID-19 vaccine have to be discarded because of quality concerns. They were made at a troubled Baltimore factory operated by Emergent BioSolutions. It is still waiting for the FDA to allow it to resume manufacturing after it contaminated a batch of Johnson & Johnson doses earlier this year. None of those doses were released to the public. The FDA has been reviewing factory records and quality tests to determine which Emergent batches are suitable for use. The agency has authorized two batches, about 10 million finished doses. They could be distributed domestically or conditionally exported abroad. Several more batches remain under review. Sydney Lupkin, NPR News.
Just before the close on Wall Street, the Dow was up 13 points. This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Coast Guard announced today that they have received permission from the CDC to no longer enforce the mandate that requires anyone traveling on commercial maritime vessels, including ferries, to wear a mask in outdoor areas. The requirement for most people to wear masks indoors for the duration of travel, including boarding and disembarking the vessel, is still in place. Exceptions for eating and drinking, identity verification, and for speaking to someone hard of hearing are still allowed. Masking up in outdoor areas on the vessel or at the dock or port, though, will no longer be required. It will take some time for the CDC to formally revise the executive order and CDC mandates that initially required masking up outdoors on maritime vessels. Until then, the CDC said they will not compel the Coast Guard and vessel operators to enforce outdoor masking requirements. Fishermen around the state are gearing up for the summer season. Preseason prices were sky high for salmon from early fisheries like Copper River. That's a big difference from last year when the industry faced low prices and high costs due to pandemic mitigation. Now, as Izzy Ross reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, some in the industry are optimistic about what this summer has in store, despite low returns to one of the state's earliest fisheries.
It's been a tough spring for Copper River's sockeye fishery. Copper River is among the first fisheries to offer fresh salmon. Its runs signal the start of the state's commercial season. But the low number of sockeye returning this year has led to limited opportunities to fish. The run is picking up, but so far the season has followed an unfortunately familiar trend. In 2020, the sockeye run was one of the lowest on record. But one thing is very different from last year.
Markets were hot, and we were able to pay that price and pass it on to the fishermen.
That's John Hickman, the executive vice president for Peter Pan Seafoods. In May, the company announced that it would pay triple last year's prices for sockeye and kings. The Cordova Times reported retailers' pre-orders for sockeye fillets were as high as $54 a pound. King fillets went for up to $80 a pound. Hickman says the reason for the price hike is pretty straightforward. Copper River is the first fishery of the season, so competition's low. And demand is high. Peter Pan's customers include restaurants and other high-end retailers. The increased prices are stoking optimism within the industry just ahead of a very different fishery. Bristol Bay sees the world's largest sockeye runs, and unlike Copper River, it runs at the same time as fisheries in other parts of the state. Hickman says the size of Bristol Bay's run will determine which products they will focus on and what the price will be.
Fish size is going to be a huge deal for us and how we handle the fish size and put them in the right places for the best return, keeping things fresh and keeping our fishermen with their nets in the water.
Andy Wink is the executive director for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. He says that while Bristol Bay is a much different fishery, the high Copper River prices are encouraging.
Well, I think seeing strong pricing in the early going for Copper River is definitely a good sign as far as where the market's at and how much demand there is. Pretty much all that product goes into the fresh market and is sold fresh. And we do marketing promotions with many retailers around the U.S. You know, already there's a lot of demand for that.
There was a lot of demand for seafood last year, and Bristol Bay saw less competition from other fisheries that experienced weaker runs. Still, prices were really low. The base price in Bristol Bay dropped to 70 cents per pound, about half of what it was in 2019. Processors spent tens of millions of dollars on COVID-19 mitigation plans in 2020. Dan Lesh, an economist with the McKinley Research Group, says that while there will still be additional costs associated with the pandemic, he expects them to be much lower this year. He says another factor that might help get fishermen bigger paychecks is higher personal income.
I think people have more money to spend, and seafood is what they want to spend it on nowadays. We do know that personal income rose last year between things like the stimulus bills and also less spending on different services helped with pushing up prices for premium seafood products. And I think Bristol Bay sockeye salmon can be in that category.
Fishermen's concerns about the low base price in 2020 prompted the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association to publish a report that laid out some of the reasons for why the price was so low. These included business risk due to the pandemic, higher operating costs, and losses in other fisheries in the state. This year, BBRSDA says that risk is down. Wink, the executive director, thinks the season may be better for fishermen.
I guess the price remains to be seen, but I think when you look at the market factors
that are in place now versus this time last year, things do look more bullish and kind of appear more favorable.
Bristol Bay's fishery kicks off in mid-June. For Alaska's Energy Desk in Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Governor Mike Dunleavy and State Revenue Commissioner Lucinda Mahoney outlined the administration's fiscal plan for the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce yesterday. KUAC's Dan Bros has this report.
The governor's plan would eliminate the annual legislative fight over use of permanent fund earnings by putting a formula for the draw in the state constitution. Addressing Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce members in person, Governor Dunleavy outlined the structural change, which is in resolutions before legislators. It would set an annual draw of 5% of permanent fund earnings and spend half the money on state government and the other half to pay out hefty PFD checks.
Government will get their 50% to spend on government. People get their 50% to spend on private sector and other things.
Dunleavy emphasized the urgency of action, saying Alaska's budget uncertainty is resulting in lost business and distracting legislators from addressing other important issues. He held up the state's nearly exhausted Constitutional Budget Reserve, or CBR, account as reason to enshrine an approach to permanent fund use.
If we don't save the ERA, the earnings reserve of the permanent fund, it's going to be gone the way of the CBR. We spent $16 to $17 billion of the CBR in the last 7 years. So that's why I'm saying it's got to be done now.
The value of the permanent fund recently surged to over $80 billion, and Revenue Commissioner Lucinda Mahoney said that makes it a good time to enact another part of the plan, a one-time draw of an additional $3 billion from the permanent fund to help bridge significant budget gaps until new revenue sources and fund growth can fully cover the shortfalls.
We believe that we will be in a surplus situation within 5 years. And this is actually pretty incredible for us to accomplish this in this time frame without having to tax you.
The premise hinges on oil prices and the stock market continuing to go up, as well as additional budget cuts and undetermined new revenue. State Senator Scott Kawasaki listened to Thursday's presentation, and while the Fairbanks Democrat applauds the administration's work on the plan, says it's incomplete without defined new revenue.
I think it would be very irresponsible of any legislature in the 31st legislature to go ahead and just vote for something like this without knowing how we're going to be able to come up with the revenues to be able to provide the kinds of services that people want.
The legislature is currently meeting in a special session, and Governor Dunleavy's Senate resolution is scheduled to be heard in the Senate Finance Committee this afternoon at 1:30. Any constitutional amendment would be additionally subject to a vote of the people. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Preliminary work began last week on a project to create a museum exhibit featuring the old bus where the central character in the book and movie Into the Wild spent his last days. The rusty relic was airlifted out of a remote spot off the Stampede Trail last year and brought back to Fairbanks, where it had been used decades ago as a city transit bus. And now the University of Alaska Museum of the North staff are planning a new outdoor exhibit that will tell the story of how Bus 142 became an American cultural icon. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
Colin Howard and another artifact conservation expert confer with Museum of the North staff about the fragile condition of Bus 142 before the conservators head back to Pennsylvania, where their art and artifact conservation company is based.
It provides a whole bunch of challenges. I mean, she's really dirty and she needs a lot of work.
Howard and his colleague Aaron Workington met with museum staff last Friday after a couple of days of examining the old rig as part of their assessment on what's needed to keep it from further deteriorating and make it presentable to the public.
So we don't want to make it brand new. I don't want to make it look like it was just repainted. It carries a significant story for multiple decades, and we want to keep that story going.
Those stories are told in part through the rust and chipping paint typically found on a 75-year-old vehicle, especially one that's been sitting exposed to the elements in a remote site near Denali National Park since it was hauled back into there in 1961. The bus served as a shelter for hunters and hikers, including Christopher McCandless, the hapless wanderer profiled in John Krakauer's account titled Into the Wild.
So we just want to stabilize it, make sure that the corrosion is no longer active. We want to stabilize flaking paint that's coming off. There's stories inside that are falling off of the walls, literally.
Some of those stories are told through graffiti that's been scrawled all over the bus and its few remaining windows. Many were left as an homage to the memory of McCandless, whose body was found in the bus on September 6, 1992, by some moose hunters. One of the scrawls reads, quote, "Godspeed, Chris, and say hi to my mom from me." Another reads, "Thanks for the inspiration." And yet another simply says, "He was here."
There's Japanese kanji in there, Russian. People from all over the world have journeyed out here to interact with this relic.
Workington says the graffiti attests to the universal appeal of the story of McCandless, a tragic figure who, after graduating from college, decided to escape society and its materialism and set out to find the meaning of life, a search that led him deep into the wilds of Alaska.
So I think he touched on something that a lot of people struggle with, like I had mentioned earlier about dealing with the modern world, and it can be so overwhelming.
You know, this is a story that really resonates with millions of people around the world.
Angela Lynn is a senior collections manager at the Museum of the North.
And whether it's because of the mystique of Alaska, whether they really identify with, you know, Chris McCandless and transition that he maybe was going through himself, you know, that people see that in themselves.
Lynn, who's managing the project, says that's one of the main reasons why Museum of the North officials believe it's important to preserve the bus and share its stories with the public.
We think it's really important to spend the money and the time and the great amount of effort to bring all those stories together. And that's part of what our job is in museums, is to get people to connect those dots within themselves.
Lynn says it's cost about $7,000 so far for Howard's firm to assess the work needed on the bus and to come up with estimates on how much it'll cost to do it. The money was raised through online crowdfunding, and Lynn says she's hoping to raise additional money the same way with help from Friends of Bus 142, an online group founded by McCandless's sister, Corrine. Lynn says much of the consulting and planning for the exhibit is being done by a 25-member interpretive team, which includes university faculty and members of the community. She says if all goes well, the exhibit could be opened by the end of 2023. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Gabrielle Ledoux, the former Republican representative from East Anchorage and one-time Kodiak mayor, faces four new felony counts of voter misconduct, state prosecutors announced yesterday. Perhaps more importantly, Ledoux's former legislative aide, Lisa Simpson, also faces two new felony charges, which could increase the pressure on her to cooperate with authorities in their efforts to prosecute Ledoux. The former legislator was initially charged last year with just one felony count and a number of misdemeanors related to her 2018 re-election campaign. The case fell idle for the past year amid COVID-19 pandemic concerns and only recently began moving forward again. Both Ledoux and her former aide have hired top-notch defense attorneys. Ledoux's lawyer declined to comment on the new charges today, while Simpson's attorney, Rex Butler, says the new charges against his client are all about the state's efforts to bring down Ledoux. Ledoux was a longtime Republican who faced a fierce backlash from Republicans after she accepted a leadership position in the House's mostly Democratic majority, and she lost her Republican primary last year. The charges against Ledoux came after state elections officials notified the Alaska State Troopers of what they described as irregularities with absentee ballot applications. The FBI also participated in the investigation. Simpson's son, Caden Vaught, is also being charged with voter misconduct. He's represented by a public defender, according to a state court's database.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Troubling signs for salmon in the North Pacific. More after this.
Did you know that the Alaska Seafood brand tops all others on menus across the nation? Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Salmon catches throughout the North Pacific reached all-time highs in 2018, but dropped last year to the lowest levels in four decades. That's according to the North Pacific Anadromous Fish Commission, which tracks salmon abundances and catches as reported by its five member countries, Canada, Japan, Korea, Russia, and the U.S. Based on 2020 catches, Pacific salmon abundance at 322.5 million fish was the lowest since 1982 and compares to a total take topping 563 million fish in 2019. Russia took 48% of the North Pacific salmon catch last year, followed by the U.S. at 41%, with all but about 5,000 tons coming from Alaska. Just 10% was taken by Japan, followed by Canada at 1% and less than that by Korea. Pink salmon made up 46% of the five nations' catches by weight, followed by chums at 27% and sockeye salmon at 23%. Pink salmon catches declined to just 392 million pounds in 2020, compared to more than 1.1 billion pounds in 2018. The total North American salmon catch of nearly 556 million pounds was the lowest since 1977. For salmon that got their start in hatcheries, releases by the five nations at about 5 billion fish have been stable since 1993. The U.S. led with 39% of the total, or more than 2 million fish released. 31% of the hatchery releases came from Japan, followed by Russia at 25%. Of the combined hatchery salmon releases, 65% were chums and 25% were pinks, followed by Chinook and sockeye releases at 4%, respectively. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 11th day of June, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 5:09. It will set again at 11:10. That will give us 18 hours and 1 minute of glorious daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 25 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this day was 72, set in 1974. Our record low was 35, set in 1997. And it's currently 50 degrees. We're still looking for those partly sunny skies, but it's nevertheless a very pleasant day outside. Looking for a high of 59 today. Calm winds should turn to the southeast this afternoon to 5 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 47, west wind to 15, and partly sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 59. West winds to 15. Looking at our tides, we have an incoming tide. The next high tide on the east side will be at 4:12 p.m. and be 6.6 feet, followed by a low tide at 9:12 p.m. of 2.9 feet. Our high tide for the middle of the night here on the east side will be at 3:16 a.m. and be 9.1 feet. And our low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 10:11 and be minus 0.9 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Zachar Bay tides, you have a high tide coming up at 4:25 this afternoon at 12.7 feet, followed by a low tide at 10:04 tonight at 3.2 feet. Your high tide for the middle of the night will be at 3:48 a.m. and be 13.9 feet, and your low tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 10:34 a.m. and be minus 1.4 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Kodiak, or for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Northeast wind to 15 knots right now. We'll turn to the southwest, go to 10 knots this afternoon, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, look for west wind to 20 knots, seas to 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof, Kodiak's west side, variable winds to 10 knots right now, becoming southwest 15 this afternoon. Seas 2 feet, building to 4 feet this afternoon in the Shelikof. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. Inside waters, Chiniac and Marmot Bays. For Chiniac Bay, variable less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest 15 in the morning, becoming variable less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, variable less than 10 right now, seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, look for west wind to 15 knots, seas to 3 feet. The Kodiak High School Summer Intensive Open House is happening next Wednesday, June 16th. That's happening between 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. at the Kodiak High School, and the subjects will be cosmetology, woods construction, and welding and CNC fabrication. But again, the Kodiak High School Summer Intensive Open House, 5:30 to 6:30, Wednesday the 16th at the Kodiak High School. The KMXT Board of Directors will hold their next regular meeting Tuesday, June 15th. It's happening at 6 p.m. via Zoom. If you'd like to sit in on the meeting, please call the station at 486-3181, or you can send an email requesting access to jared@kmxt.org. That's jared@kmxt.org, and Jared will send you a link. The Planning and Zoning Commission is having a regular meeting next Wednesday, June 16th. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers. On Thursday, the 17th, the Borough Assembly will be having their next regular meeting. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. The 2021 Rainbow Fun Run is happening. They're having guided virtual runs between the 21st and the 25th of this month. And on Saturday, June 26th, they're having in-person fun, including a Pride Fun Run, a 5K, a 1 mile, and from 10:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., food trucks, island-style mobile entertainment, and Pride Celebration. That's happening Saturday the 26th. All ages and athletic abilities are encouraged. Post-race food trucks are going to be there. And to sign up, go to www.runsignup.com. www.runsignup.com. Have you heard the buzz? Kodiak Public Library is hosting a community beekeeping project. Watch a live hive check every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Call to reserve a spot outside with the beekeeper or watch from the safety of inside behind the glass. For more information, contact Ani at 486-8683. Also, if you're looking for a job, the library is a great place to start your job search with resources for discovering a new career path, creating a resume, and finding local job opportunities. The Alaska Department of Labor offers several weekly workshops, such as creating effective resumes and interviewing strategies. The library can help you with your job search. The library is open from 10 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. on Monday through Thursday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued 10 a.m. on June 9th. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th until 9 p.m. Saturday, June 12th in the following areas: in the Cape Alatak, Humpy Dead Man, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. As previously announced, there will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period in the Northwest Kodiak District from noon Wednesday, June 9th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 10th. Following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Izuit Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters will be reduced in the following locations: in Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406. In Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. And in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy Bay and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the mainland district, beginning at noon Tuesday, June 8th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. The closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the June 11th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Green. The mixture of rain and sun the past week has really worked some magic on the greening of Kodiak. You can almost see the island becoming more verdant every day. There are many varieties of green on Kodiak. Some are seasonally based. For example, it's been cool so far this summer, so much so that it seems like we're still in the late spring stages of green, sort of that bright yellow new green. A little farther into the summer, not long from now, all of the trees and bushes will have all their leaves and the grasses will be growing up over the heads of many of us, and the island just looks lush. Then, and you'll know it when you start to see it, there's a subtle shift to late summer, early autumn green. But for right now, we get to enjoy this vibrant green and all of the other colors that come with it. The pinks and magentas of shooting stars, rose orchids, and salmonberry blossoms. The amazing arrays of purple in lupin and later the iris. All of it is so much fun to observe and for some of us to photograph. Any day, the raven little ones will start making a ruckus in the forest, a little quietly at first from the nest as mom and dad come in with food. But they'll fledge in another couple of weeks, and then things get really rowdy and loud in the spruce forest. Young raven fledglings have a habit of getting out of the nest and not finding their way home as quickly as they'd like. So the siblings sometimes hang together and make a raucous noise until a parent comes along to lead them back to the nest. So the next time you wish those birds would just be quiet already, just remember, it's some little raven trying to find his or her way home. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.